Three, two, one, ghost. Hey, everybody. Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to 3, 2, 1, ghost. I'm your host with the silent G, Kyle, and as always, joined by my holiday pal. I don't know. Natalie, how are you?
I'm doing great. I thought you were going to say, I'm your host with a silent ho, because it has ghost has HO.
I
I don't
like that.
know. It could have worked.
I'll save it for next year. You just
Okay.
have to remind me.
Everyone will forget. Everyone will forget by then. So it'll work.
Well, so to those who celebrate, we are releasing this on Christmas Eve. So ho ho ho, if that's your thing. Not only is this our last movie of the year,
True.
again, maybe we're feeling a little bit like we're in the Christmas spirit. So what we wanted to do with this episode is a gift. Provide a gift. I don't know. We make it sound like we're being so fucking benevolent here.
We're
Just like
so gracious.
we are doing our very first fan submitted request. And today's episode is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon from 2007.
Yeah. It's from 2006.
Is it?
Yeah.
Whoops. All right.
Yeah.
Well, my
It
notes are
might
already out of
this
whack.
no, I think this is one of those movies that because it's a like independent film, it has multiple release dates. That happens sometimes.
So we're doing this movie as a listener request. Natalie, do you mind sharing a little bit about the people that suggested this one?
Yes, of course. So this film was requested by our friends at Mouths of Madness podcast. So you can find them in several different ways. They have an audio podcast and they also have a video podcast. So Mouths of Madness is their audio podcast. So that's hosted by Kevin, who I'm pretty sure is the one I was messaging and specifically requested this movie. So maybe it's not on behalf of all four of them. Also Dan, Bearclaw, and Logan. Now, you can find them on Instagram at mouths.of.madness. Easy enough. Easier than ours, probably. And then they're also on YouTube with a video podcast that has actually a different set. So you've got still Kevin, then you have Nathan and Jill who are on their video podcast, and that's called Straight Jacket Talk. So follow them, subscribe to them. We do. So yeah, shout out to them. Shout out to
Both
Kevin.
great names. I love that. And Kevin's a
Yeah.
good name too.
Kevin's a great name too.
I was talking about the podcast, but also shout out to Kevin. Hey man, good name. I'll put their info in the show notes section.
Perfect.
Hell yeah. So, have you seen this movie before? Have we watched it together?
We did. So we watched this on one of our movie nights for the first time together. And I remember thinking, wow, what a fun and interesting premise. But I remember not loving it. So I think a couple years later, I watched it again by myself and had the same feeling. So this is definitely a movie that I kind of had in the back of my mind that we could cover because I think it will be a fun conversation. But I won't spoil anything of how I feel about it now, but similar themes. And did you watch it ever again after we watched it for movie night?
No, and like I said, that was probably around the time when it came out, right? 07, 08, something like that. Since then, I had not seen the movie. I watched it again today with notes, so I'm very excited about that.
Did it
Yeah,
feel
I
new?
mean, it did feel new because I didn't remember really any of the details about it outside of the fact that they are a document. Documentary. I don't know why I couldn't pronounce that. Documentary crew following this guy who is a serial killer. I forgot all the other stuff.
Okay.
So
Well,
it
that's
felt pretty
fun.
new watching it again. Yeah.
Okay.
This
Nice.
movie is directed by and written, co-written by and produced by Scott Glosserman, co-written with David J. Stive. We've got Nathan Basil. Gosh, sorry, y'all.
There's some
he
really
is
interesting last names on this cast, too.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Shout out to Scott Wilson because I can pronounce that. Angela Gothalis. Fuck.
I liked how you said it the first time, Gothalis. That feels right.
Gothalis. It sounds, yeah. Like I said, you've got Nathan B. He plays our guy, Leslie Vernon, or Leslie something else. I forget his last other
I don't
last name
remember
starts with an
his real
M.
last name, yeah.
Trust me, I promise I did take notes. Angela G, she plays Taylor, who is our main kind of host, a grad student, leading this doc. I can't say that word, documentary crew. Oh my gosh, y'all. Yeah, and then yeah, you got Caitlin Johnson, Ben Pace, Britton Spellings, Zelda Rubinstein, who
Love
my
her.
wife, yeah, my wife had to point out it was in Teen Witch.
Hell yeah, she's an industry legend just for Teen Witch. I'm gonna go and throw that out right now.
Okay, I absolutely wholeheartedly endorse that, Zelda Rubinstein. And then our boy, industry legend, Freddy Krueger himself,
Robert
Robert
England.
Englund.
Oh, he's so great. He's good in this.
He's good in
He's
this.
good in
He's good in
everything.
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 Isn't it wild that not only have we covered, I think, off the top of my head, three Robert Englund movies with Wishmaster, Urban Legend, and this, but we still haven't done a Nightmare on Elm Street.
No. I think that I shouldn't say I think. We'll get there. We'll get there. But when we do, it's gonna be a lot. So we'll get there.
One thing I forgot about this movie too is that the idea that Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, Chucky, he does mention Chucky,
Yeah.
exist in this world.
I love that. That's probably my favorite thing about this movie.
It's mine too. And just to think how bonkers that is, and just how I mean, can you just imagine just living day to day? I mean, just be like, imagine when I met you when we were in high school, and I'm like, oh, cool, where are you from? You're like, oh, I'm from Jersey. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Why'd you move here? And then you're like, oh, because there's this dude that straight up just can't be stopped, who's roaming through the woods killing people.
I didn't
I
want to
just
be a
need.
teenager in New Jersey because any vices and he would have come for me.
If you just add up all the deaths over the course of those movies up until now, because that's basically everything
Oof.
up until Jason X, because Jason X has not happened yet in this timeline.
So many.
All the death, like there is a non-zero or like a pretty hefty percent chance that you would not survive your teen years just by
Yeah.
virtue of living in near that area. Now, Jersey's a big
Also,
state, of course, so you could avoid Crystal Lake, but still, I just.
Chucky too is from Jersey.
Yeah, Jesus. So, yeah,
So
anywhere.
I would have been a child at that time, his
And
primary target.
that little fucking doll is mobile, you know? So. And then the supernatural parts of it, it's like you're supposed to believe. And people just nod, like when he mentions like Chucky, like that. No, there is a possessed doll that lives.
And murders.
It is Charles Lee Ray, who is in the body of this doll who's been murdering people.
I love that.
I know that is really good. It is my favorite part of the movie. What do you think about Leslie Vernon as this attempted addition to this pantheon? What do you think in terms of his style, his background, his look, his weapon, his story? I don't know. What were your impressions?
Well, I think one of the things that isn't working in Leslie Vernon's favor is that he does exist in a universe where there's Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, and the rest. And I'm presuming that their stories are true based off of what I know from their films. Whereas Leslie is like picking up on somebody else's story. That kind of bothers me. But that aside, I actually really enjoy Nathan B's performance. I enjoy his performance a lot. I really like the character of Leslie. I think he's really fun and relatable, but he feels like an amateur, which I think is fun. He feels very aspirational for what he's doing. Like, I feel like he's got bigger dreams than he can actually fulfill. But I like that about him. I think the mask is really silly. I think the backstory is fun. So I like the whole setup and premise of Leslie Vernon. I think it's really fun, and I just like the whole setup. I think it's great. How about you?
I like the mask.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good. I like the Batman eye paint he puts on under his mask. I love it. The challenge, like you said, like this isn't his backstory. He is trying to appropriate someone else's backstory. So already he's not Jason or Freddy or Michael, et cetera, right? And also, he has to do all this like excessive planning to get everything just right. Do you think Jason Voorhees plans anything? That
No,
dude,
it's a tank.
he is a vibe. He is a live, laugh, love. He just goes through life just doing just like whatever
Yeah.
whatever his heart takes him to,
His undead heart.
Like Freddy, yes, does a little bit of planning, but that's
Oh
all
yeah.
just more of the in the dreamscape,
Freddy's planning for sure.
and then Michael, kind of same thing. He just stumbles around, So already it's like, I don't know. Now,
Chucky plans. He does
Chuck.
little plans. He tries to creep people out. He's running around rooms. Like he's doing his thing, you know?
Well, that's because he has like size against him, right? And he still the cool thing about Chucky is Chucky can still be out in the open because he's a doll, right? So you always have that, initial you have
He's got that element of
your guard
surprise.
down. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong, Leslie does have all of the makings of a creep. He's got the soul patch. He owns reptiles. He knows magic. He's like literally like one ponytail away.
I knew you were going to bring up the magic.
Again, I
He's
love
no David
magic.
Blaine.
He is no David Blaine. I'm sorry. There's nobody else that makes magic look cool, but fuck, David Blaine makes it look so good. I love it. And also, just like David Blaine, I would also, if someone said he was a serial killer, I would totally believe it. He has the eyes of a killer.
It just soulless, empty.
Yeah. So,
I
but
feel
yeah,
it.
I like the scythe. Dumb story behind it. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, they just make this, I don't know, make this kid just work out in the apple orchard by himself with a scythe. It's
Just
so
the
silly.
fight.
Yeah, I don't know. So let's hop into this movie.
Let's do it.
You're introduced to Taylor. You see her the most because she's the one on camera. You don't see Doug or Todd. I don't think at all until it switches to the like more standard horror movie part.
Yeah, I don't think you see them at all. In fact, when I rewatched this movie, I forgot from the last time. I was like, wait, are there two guys with her? I was like, or am I just forgetting the name and I keep thinking it's Doug or Todd?
Yeah.
And then at the end, last time I watched, I was like, oh shit, there are two guys. Like, that's how little you see them. Which I like.
Yeah, I think I like because when you do see
Oh, they're
Doug and
acting.
Todd, Jesus Christ, it's pretty rough. So I like them better when they were not on camera.
I agree.
Just being just casual, like creep, weird child perverts,
Yes,
Because
absolutely.
remember, that's one thing like you always have to kind of remember and is it and the challenge with me is like when I was watching horror movies, like especially slashers, I was a little kid. So even
Or
all
we
the
were teenagers.
teenagers, yeah, so they were either my age or and these movies had like 20 somethings playing teenagers. So like everyone just looked older to me. But like you have to kind of just remember that these are children. Like
Yeah.
when they're talking about watching them fuck or looking, trying to get video up their skirts and shit. Like these are children.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So,
At least if it's like one teenager like being a creep to another teenager, you're like, okay, at least you guys are in the same age group. But
yeah.
when it's, yeah, Todd and Doug are not, they're not the best.
No, they're not the best. I wish they both died. I don't like Doug living through this.
I agree. I don't think Doug deserved to make it through.
And Todd doing his dumb hero shit. I don't know. So they are doing this documentary. I don't know. I just need to come up with a different word,
You
Natalie.
just
I
need
don't
to come
know.
up with just their film.
I keep wanting to say documentary. I don't know why I want to keep accenting that one
Just, ooh,
part.
just say it that way. It'll make
Sure,
you
just
sound
go with
smart.
it. I don't think it does. So we're introduced. Taylor is hosting this. She is giving some background on who Leslie Vernon was. Sounds like just some asshole kid that people were just like, fuck you, we're done. We're gonna throw you off a waterfall.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. And he actually is dead. He actually is dead. That's the worst part. He isn't coming back for revenge. Taylor and her, she asks, I think, after the report, like, oh, does that sound too like Diane Sawyer? And she definitely sounds like she's trying to sound like Diane Sawyer. I don't know if you are familiar with her, but her cheesy reporter voice really bugs me. It feels very out of character. Like she'd sound better if she just used her real voice.
So they're at this farmhouse, and they're trying to track down this guy who invited them there. He's hiding up in the windows watching them and shit. They think they hear something behind a shed. He probably just had some little booby trap thing just set
Yeah,
off to,
for
you
sure.
know. But then he presents himself, and again, he's just this kind of like,
He's very disarming.
I wouldn't say disarming.
I think so. For what he's doing and his like when he's like showing them around the house and like asking them stupid questions, like if they have a deck of cards, like with the magic, like he feels like a adult child.
And I don't know if that's disarming to me, but I hear you. And then basically outlines his plan, that he is, this Leslie Vernon character. He did not actually die. He has been in hiding for the last like 30 years or so. And I think I missed this part. Is it like on the anniversary of his
Yeah, I
death?
think
Is like when
so.
he's coming to his childhood home?
Yeah.
So the childhood home, which they go to after this, and he shows them around, which he's booby-trapped for this event that he's planning. He wants to bring a group of teenagers and basically stage a slasher, him being the character of Leslie Vernon.
I think what's important to point out here is that he's a terrible pet owner. Is he trying
Oh,
to kill
yeah.
those turtles? He introduces his turtles and then he says he's left them like when he goes on trips and says he's like the little buggers just won't die. And I was like, oh my gosh, is he gonna kill those turtles?
I don't like the animal torture here. I wasn't sure if that was because I guess Leslie Vernon was like also like eaten by turtles, I guess, according to this librarian later on.
Oh, so
So
maybe, yeah,
does he just
maybe
have it
that's
out?
the
Is
connection.
it's part of his like thing is like he's like he has it out for turtles now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
That's
like that. Okay, I like that better.
so he lines out basically the three steps in putting a plan like this together to Taylor. The first one being the location, which is his childhood farmhouse, which I guess has just like been in a trust that he could own if he wanted to make himself known, but I don't know, whatever.
Does doesn't matter.
It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
So then he goes to the high school, I guess this local high school, and he brings the crew. And he's explaining like, how he is very intentionally picking his friend group. and not just his friend group, but a central person in that friend group who is a virgin and a young woman to basically be what he calls, and they call throughout the movie, the survivor girl. Is there a copyright on Final Girl that they couldn't use that?
I was wondering about that too. It is really strange that they say survival girl or survivor girl instead of final girl, but there's a
Yeah.
couple different things. And now, of course, I'm not thinking of any examples off the top of my head. There's a couple things that they say that feel like off-brand versions of tropes that we all know. And I don't know if that's intentional or what, but Survivor Girl sounds really silly.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very good. So he's pointing out, people he could, be part of the friend group, also some people who could just be some fodder if he just needs to pile on some extra kills. It is also just really strange and off-putting where like he like watches these children and just determines just from guessing who is a virgin and who isn't. And clearly he's not very good at that.
Well, I think, okay. I think he knows that Kelly is not a virgin. Like he planned this shit out from the beginning that his survivor girl is actually Taylor. But I think that also is a big risk if he knew that Kelly was kind of wild. Like she seems like she's just the same as all of her other friends. Like there's no like there's nothing that really makes her different other than that she hangs out at the library late at night. So like yeah, she studies. But I mean, okay, think about when you were a teenager though. I feel like you could point out like who was having sex and who wasn't. Now, as an adult, I don't think I could point that out in teenagers, but as a fellow teenager, I think I could. If you all could see Kyle's face.
I mean, I just don't know how what I want to admit on a podcast, but I was gonna say I'll just say it. I mean,
What?
I was active in high school. I did not look like someone who was active. I was
But
a big old fucking dork.
I
Not the
would
dorks can't,
bet
you know.
that all the other teenagers knew because you had a long-term girlfriend. Like that's a red flag of yeah, you're probably active because I bet your mom knew.
I
Yeah, she
didn't think
knew.
about that. Probably. So Leslie reveals that like he's actually already had this group picked out, and he's been planning this for months now. Now the first girl that he identifies as the virgin, like you don't see her later in the movie ever
No,
again.
so he
That's where I
mentions
got
that.
confused.
So he mentions while they're at this school that this is a completely different school than the one that Kelly goes to
Oh, okay.
because he doesn't want to be spotted. So I think he just does this as like a practice exercise to see like if he can have moments like he did with that other girl where he's like, oh, like, did you see that? Did you feel that? So I think that's what he's trying to accomplish there and to show them the process, but he wouldn't dare go to Kelly's school because he can't risk her seeing him.
That makes perfect sense. Thank you for clarifying that. Speaking of Kelly, they go to the diner where she works. He wants to, again, just kind of like plant this seed of
I
that
love
maybe
this.
something isn't completely safe. You know, he ties fishing wire to a brick. It is kind of silly.
It's silly, but it's fun and it's effective.
He like calls it like a red herring, but like, no, it's not. Like, that's not, I
Oh,
don't, that's
okay.
not.
That was the other example, using red herring like with objects instead of with a person, like a different. They'd use it twice
Or
in the wrong way.
is Kelly the red herring because she was never supposed to be the survivor girl, right?
I
I
don't
don't
think that's
know.
how he was using it. I think he was using it in context with the brick situation, like
I don't
being
know.
threatening. I'm not sure, but I think so. Something because we're going to nitpick at this a lot. Something I will give this movie credit for is originality on the concept. I think it's a really fun and cool concept. But things like that, like the Survivor Girl, the red herring, like things like that, even that term that they use for Robert Englund's character, Ahab, I was
Yeah.
like, I've never heard that before. So like it felt like they were just like making up terminology and like complicating things more than it needed to be. And it ruins like scenes like this where I'm like, oh, this is a really fun setup, how he's showing how to catch a glance and then disappear and distract her, scare her, make her feel like something's not right. And things like that can be very distracting.
Well, Ahab is from Moby Dick. Like the idea that, like, this Ahab and his white whale, right? Like, I get where they kind of mean that, but they
Oh,
talk
I
about
did not
it.
know that reference at all.
Yeah,
I've never read Moby Dick.
the Ahab one makes a little bit more sense in that you have like your what's the equivalent? You've got like Donald Pleasance, and his character and Michael Myers, right? Who is what Freddy Krueger, I think, is most closely playing, right? But this idea, like Ahab also, if I don't know, I've been a long time since I read this book, but like I wouldn't necessarily call him like this like epitome of pure good either,
No.
so that's a little weird. That's why I was like, it's not apples to apples exactly. So then they're off to meet Eugene and Jamie. This is also a weird relationship.
I like Eugene and Jamie a lot. They're also two of the better actors in this movie as well.
Yeah. It's never said exactly, but very, very heavily implied. She was a target of his at some point, right? Like she was a survivor girl, right? Or at least maybe not the survivor girl, but in someone who survived that was part of that group. He is buried underground and has been for 3 days.
Yeah, it's a sensory deprivation situation he's got set up, which I
Yeah,
also
so
thought was a fun idea.
and is he doing that? Why?
So Leslie explains why he would have done it in the past while he was still actively killing,
Yeah.
which is to
To make it seem dead.
control, yes, to make yourself seem dead. So you're controlling all your bodily functions, like how you breathe and all of that, so that you can just lay and just be completely appearing dead. But I think Taylor like poses the question and says, well, then why is he doing it now? And he's like, I don't know. So maybe he
He
just
just
does it
gets off on
just
it.
for funsies. Yeah, you know,
Yeah.
3 days is a long time.
I get a little bored.
I think I would just die.
Eugene wakes up. They bury him or they unbury him, take him out of there. And he gives a little bit of background. He was doing it in the 50s and 60s. Then he says that in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, that's when, your Freddy's, Michael's, Jason's, Chucky's, like kind of changed the game. And then it became, these like unstoppable, like supernatural slashers, right?
And they were known, which he also said was different because he mentioned like going around doing the job and then disappearing and not like having this whole backstory situation.
Right. And also, I'm sorry, this really weak ass defense of why they're doing what they're doing. And it's like, you need to pit evil against good. You need evil because without it, good wouldn't like exist, or like it evil encourages good. I don't know. It's really fucking stupid. It sounds like some dumb bullshit that like some crazy fucking psycho killer would say to justify
I
what he's
mean,
doing.
obviously they have their own different moral compass that is not moral at all. So they're trying to find some way to justify what they're doing, especially when they're talking to a journalist, which we haven't even gotten into, like how problematic her witnessing all of this and being an accomplice to it is.
Yeah.
But when they're something, so I really like Eugene's character and his personality is really fun. I really enjoy the scene in the kitchen where Jamie asks him to chop the vegetables and he's talking about, his past and going all over all of that with Taylor. And he's making like complete eye contact with her, but he's like dicing carrots and you can just hear the knife just going really fast. And he's like perfectly diced these carrots and she kind of like gets startled. I really enjoyed that. I thought that that was very fun. And it shows how skilled he is with a knife.
After this, they go to the library. Part of Leslie's plan is to plant a fake news article that connects him to Kelly. This idea of a fake great uncle that very well could be the father of Leslie, right? So then you have this kind of relationship. I don't know what family relationship that makes them, you know? But whatever. I don't want to think about it.
He
But
actually,
creating that
no, he
connection.
explains it. He explains it well because it's like a revenge story, basically. But I like everything that happens at the library. I really enjoy this whole sequence of how it starts off with him explaining how it's all going to go down. You see him set it up, and he's like just zippity doodon all over the fucking library. And then it goes into that like cinematic mode, I guess we could call it. And I wish the end of the movie reflected this version of this like cinematic world because it feels very silly and campy and over the top. And it works for me. I don't know if it works for you, but I enjoy it.
Well, one, you know, I love a good library study scene. So, all about it. Also, it's called a microfinch.
I've never heard that name.
That's the thing that you pull up all the old newspaper articles on in a library. I never knew what that was called.
I never knew what it was called either. Hopefully that's the right name because we can't trust this movie for that.
Or microfiche, something like that.
Microfiche. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. They just kept saying it just so confidently, and I was like, I'd never heard of this
I would
name.
have been like, the what?
Speaking of journalism ethics, this is when like he kills the librarian, like he murders somebody.
I know. We only get a little bit of Zelda.
And she is very, very helpful, and I think loves to scare children with that
Oh,
story.
yeah. She was telling that story like it was not her first fucking rodeo for sure.
Oh, she was chewing that shit up. I loved
Yeah.
it. But unfortunately, she's not there for long. She gets killed. You also have Doc Halloran, played by Robert Englund,
Such a good
who,
entrance.
yeah, shows up in the coat, shoots him, and he's able to escape. And he catches up with the film crew. And they're like, I guess, did they know he killed the librarian?
Who, the film crew?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he says he's going to kill the librarian. Back at Eugene's, they say that the librarian would be a good one to kill to get her like shook up, but not in her friend group. And then you see the whole thing play out. Oh, but they went back to the van, right? By the time that Doc Halloran is there and like shooting at him.
I think so, because it's not being like shot like Doug or Todd are holding the camera. It's like shot
You're
like, you know.
right. They do leave, so they do not witness him killing the librarian. But I mean, she's a fucking journalist. She should know how to look that shit up the next day that woman was murdered.
Yeah, because like outside they're like jumping around and he's like, I found my Ahab, I got my Ahab. And she's like, yeah, awesome, awesome. They're all celebrating and shit. And I'm like, he murdered somebody. I mean, like, I don't know what they thought was going to happen, you know, when this dude
Well,
calls him out and says this is what he's going to do and this is why he wants to be filmed. I don't know why they were expecting anything different, but here we are.
I think they were expecting this to be a situation where he's just talking the talk but won't actually walk the walk because based off of their reaction to kills later in the movie, I would assume they did not know that the librarian was murdered. And I think my thing with Taylor is because she goes through a couple sequences where she's asking Leslie questions, and One, she's way too fucking serious to like, she's not fun at any point in this movie. She's very, very serious. For as annoying as Todd and Doug are, at least they're like having a good time while, you know, they're going through this process. But she asks him several questions where she, you can tell that morally she is completely against this and not okay with it. But for some reason, she still continues to do it. So I'm assuming that's her wanting to be a big journalist. She like wants to find something that will, you know, make her name known. But that back and forth of her having the moral dilemma is really annoying.
And I guess, you know, he's already given his whole spiel about the virgin thing. Wouldn't you maybe think for a minute, I am a virgin myself, and he did summon me here, and maybe I, or like, just go get laid or get away, right? I don't know. You would see that coming a mile
It
away,
would be a
right?
huge red flag, and she does
Yeah.
not realize that she's the one until fucking 95% of this movie is over. Like, she's still talking Kelly through a crisis situation. I'd be like, oh shit, it's not Kelly, it's me. I'm the only fucking 40-year-old virgin here. So, like, what what are you thinking, Taylor?
Just imagine Steve Carell in this movie.
He's the target. He's the
He's the
survivor girl.
target. Yeah, he's the survivor girl. I love that. They go over the footage with Eugene afterwards. Again, everyone's stoked that they've got their Ahab in Doc Holliran.
They're so excited.
And then the next day, the crew is at the diner where Kelly works. And Leslie asks, like, don't interfere, don't fucking talk to her. But
Which is
they're contemplating
fair,
whether or not they should.
considering.
Yeah. You also have Robert Englund in this diner too, who absolutely knows that they're filming like immediately and then confronts them.
I love him from across the diner, sitting there, like the way he's looking at them. He's playing this role so serious, and it's so good.
I like that Kelly's like also just like okay having him around like that too.
After he saved my life, I would probably be okay with having him around too.
Yeah, be like, you get bottomless mimosas, man. You get to hang out here all day.
Probably bottomless coffee.
Probably bottomless coffee.
He has a moment where he's talking to them and basically, like, you know, he does his little exposition dump and says that Leslie's not who he says he is and gives his real name and all of that, which is important. But he has this moment where he's looking. I don't know if it's Todd or Doug that is holding the camera, if they both have cameras, or one is a sound guy, maybe. That's what's confusing. Like, one maybe is a sound guy, and then maybe one's holding a camera. But you can see Robert Englund looking at Todd and Doug, like in the face. And he says, expect to see more of me. And then looks right into the camera with like the best expression. And in that moment, you know the movie's not going to get any better than that one moment. He's so good. So I had to call that out because I think that's the only time he really gets to like do a lot, but he still shines.
He also lets them know that this guy is not Leslie Vernon. Yeah, he
Huge red
is
flag again.
also has the though also has the first name Leslie. So I guess he was probably just like Googling just murder stories with kids named Leslie, you know? I don't know. He's from Reno and then also was being seen by Doc Holloran. And is now left and is planning this killing spree. The crew confront Leslie about this. Fuck Doug. Fuck Todd. Because like Leslie like fucking like starts to like choke her out. Like he like throws her against the
He
car,
really
stuck in,
does.
and they're just sitting there just filming it like assholes. Like Jesus Christ.
That's the other thing too, because and probably another reason why I don't realize that Doug and Todd are two characters at this point, because if you've got two guys with you versus little skinny Leslie over there. I mean, we know he's in good shape from his cardio routine, but it's so unbelievable to me that neither of them would even say, like, hey, man, like, cut that shit out or like yell at him. So that feels really weird. But also, I'm assuming that it's there for a reason because it seems like Taylor is kind of enthralled by Leslie in some way because she really gets him to like try to stop at the end. And like they have like a little moment where he's like holding her face and all of that. So I'm like, she's got some weird like draw to him, I guess. But it feels like a weird, very rapidly progressing abusive relationship, if that makes sense.
Well, and then when they're talking about Kelly, Taylor says, like, do you love her?
Yeah.
And he goes, I love the idea of her, whatever. But like, really, I think he's talking about Taylor,
For
right?
sure.
Very briefly, they're like, should we keep doing this? They decide to keep doing it. And then they meet him at his childhood farmhouse, or at least Lizzie Vernon's childhood farmhouse, the next day, where he's just hanging out, unloading his Prius.
I like that.
I wonder if he like drives for like Uber on the side. I
I
feel like
mean,
they're all
maybe. How
Priuses.
else is he making money? Like, what's he doing?
That's what I would think if he doesn't actually like how does he own that farmhouse? Not the decrepit, childhood one, but the one he actually lives in, which is pretty nice.
I mean, we don't know his actual background. Maybe he was a criminal and he's got money.
He also starts getting really comfortable here. I notice how he starts calling her Tay from here on out.
Yeah.
And she even calls him Les. And I'm just like, whoa,
That's what
whoa,
I'm
whoa. Y'all
saying. Like
best friends now?
they're like rapidly developing a like weird friendship situation.
So he is taking them through the childhood house where the kids are going to be. And, he starts going on this whole thing about, the closet's a womb, and
Yeah, it's
then
very complicated.
the woods are a birth canal, and axes are wieners. Like I get it,
The
like
cock
I.
metaphor.
Well, it's just because it's all very like, yeah. I've talked to a film bro in high school that talks about slasher movies. It feels
Yeah.
very surface level.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like he's very amateur. Like all of the things that he's describing are these really simplified ways of interpreting slashers. Some tropes and some do have some, backing to them, and others just feel like an over-exaggeration of like the closet isn't a safe space. We know this to be true in many movies. So him saying that he wouldn't bust into the closet is complete bullshit.
And then, the phallic thing. I'm like, I get it. I know. It's if you're gonna do that, I'd say just go the whole way and just carve little shapes of wieners into every single one of those weapons in the shed, and just make it like really on the nose obvious. I think that would have been a nice touch.
That would
But
have
then
been
also,
too slapsticky.
and then too, like even like his very surface level takes and interpretations on these tropes. Like it also comes from that, frankly, I'm sorry, very stale, very boring male gaze,
Yeah.
straight male gaze.
Yeah.
It's just like I felt like I was like, yeah, I don't
Taylor
know.
points that out, though. She's like, when he makes the metaphor about the closet and the womb, she asks him if he's pro-life. And then she also later points out that he's a chauvinist. And I think that he thinks he's being very deep and meaningful through this whole journey and like the symbolism and just the nature of all these things are so deep and so meaningful and powerful, but really it's just a bunch of silly tropes that are based in misogyny, and He's just this pathetic, like, incel who, whatever his background is, we don't know, but like, clearly he's got a laundry list of issues. So I think that that's also interesting when you're thinking about Taylor, because you're seeing all of these flaws and all of this stupidity just pouring out of Leslie, like, time and time again, then him attacking her. Like, I feel like all of it is a test that she's failing. Because she's still drawn to him and his interpretation of things and his plan and whether or not he'll execute it. So she's turning herself into his survivor girl just by being enamored by him.
So before getting ready for the night, he goes off skipping stones with his paternal figure, Eugene. This is a very cute scene. Real
Yes.
cute shot. I did like that.
It is cute.
So we get to the night when the kids arrive. So pieces start falling into place. The kids are downstairs when you have the crew and Leslie who are upstairs. And, just like how he kind of walks them through, like earlier when he was like walking them through the house, you would also get these kind of flash scenes of the kids dying as he's kind of plotting it out.
Oh, yeah, I liked that little flash back and forth and like showing Kelly, going through the apple orchard and how everything's going to play out, because a lot of it is giving you hints of what you're going to find in this third act. And some of it is to throw us off as an audience and also throw Taylor and Todd and Doug off as well.
Like, I guess, sure, teenagers are dumb, especially in these movies, but Kelly, you were just attacked in this library and you just saw that library and murdered.
Yeah.
And like literally a day later, like you're just gonna go and just have sex in some haunted cabin.
I mean, maybe she is 17. Like, that feeling when you're a teenager where you think like nothing really bad could ever happen to you. That's what Kelly is experiencing. For sure. She's not fucking worried. There is a really important moment that also confuses me, where after Leslie is done getting ready and putting on his like face paint and flame retardant stuff on his face, which I thought was really fun, him and Taylor are sitting at the top of the barn, and there's a couple things that confuse me. So the way he's like getting like really excited for this moment and kind of like having like he's getting teary and all of this makes it feel like it's the first time he's ever done this. But when he's going over his plans and showing how he scopes out kids and things like that, he is making it sound like he's done this before. So I was a little confused as to if this was his first time playing out this whole scene or if he's done this many times before as different characters with different groups of kids.
Right. I think you're supposed to believe this is for his first time doing this, but he also, like, I forget exactly what he says, but there's at least one or two times where he, like, makes a reference, like, oh, they don't usually do that. Or, like, oh, I haven't done that before. And so I'm kind of like, wait, are you saying, like, are you basing this off of, following Jason
Stories.
and Michael and Freddy?
Yeah.
Or have you done this before? And it's hard to say. And I'd say, like, ah, if he's fucking crazy, he probably has, right?
I would think that he has, and maybe he's trying to fake like this is his like really, his big moment where he's like fully fleshed out this character, this whole plan, and all of that. But him and Taylor have this weird, again, weird moment together where he's like near tears and she's kind of teary-eyed, like happy for him. And it's just really odd and off-putting, because at some point I was like, oh, maybe she'll switch gears and be like, let's just do this together, like a Joker Harley Quinn kind of situation, instead of her ha taking the moral high ground and all of a sudden being like, oh my gosh, I can't watch these kids be murdered. I thought that that was just like her character is just very inconsistent in that way.
Along with Kelly, you have a couple stoners, you've got a jock, you got a cheerleader, And then you've got like a friend and her boyfriend, I think. Yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah. And then those are the kids. It doesn't really matter. But
Yeah.
the jock and the cheerleader, just like Leslie planned, go upstairs, start having sex. Again, he's talking about children when he's like, I like to give them a little bit of time, let them enjoy
Yeah.
themselves. It's a good.
But he's like he's like it's not a bad way to go out.
And then just like Todd and Doug being like fucking dipshits, right? Like, I'm like, he is going to murder these children. So, and
Yeah.
they're like all perfectly okay with this. Like,
I
even
don't think they
when.
thought he was gonna do it. I really think they didn't think he was gonna do it.
Even when. Well, so he goes and does it. And I don't like how many actual kills are off screen in this movie.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. Low budget. I get it. So they're like, okay, now all of a sudden, Taylor has this change of heart. He's like, oh wow, he actually killed those people. That's what I was thinking, like, maybe she didn't know that he actually killed the librarian. But again, come on. Look at the news, Google search. Be a journalist. Come on.
Yeah, like she is no Gale Weathers, I'll tell you that right now.
No,
No,
absolutely not.
not even close.
So like I said, the crew panics, and then Leslie's like, see, I fucking knew it. You know what? Never mind. Don't fuck this up. I don't really need you all anyway at this point. Go, go. He starts sending them all out into the van. This is when he has his creepy goodbyes and starts, like touching Taylor's face and shit when it's like Tay and Les and whatever. Then he goes back in. It's like, okay, I'm gonna go back to killing now. And then this is when it shifts away from it not being a documentary anymore. So it's not, from the perspective of people holding the cameras, it is just a standard slasher at this point. When Taylor's like, okay, documentary's over. See, I can say the word now. And we need to stop him. Not call the cops, not,
Yeah,
try
I.
to save themselves, not anything that could have been a smarter idea at this point. They're like, no, we know his plan, even though he already planned for that. So again, just how dumb these fucking
Well,
people are.
in their defense, they weren't going to be calling the cops because this is like, if you're 2006, not everybody is rolling around with cell phones. So, good chance that none of them have a cell phone. I do
One does, no
appreciate.
service.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that. I do appreciate because a lot of times in found footage, they don't have the ability to switch back and forth into this like documentary, like cinematic universe, like type situation. So I appreciate that she's like, let's put the cameras down, turn this shit off, because that's what real people would do. And a lot of times they have to find reasons to keep the cameras on. So I thought that was a cool little shift there. But once they switch into this scene, the rest of this whole process goes real flat for me because the acting is rough. And Leslie was what was like holding together those scenes of him and Taylor and Doug and Todd. So once you have Leslie now having no more spoken words until he's killed, you lose a lot. And the teenagers too are just not, they are not great actors.
Yeah, and you get maybe like 2 seconds with Robert Englund.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, oh geez, with Doug and Todd, like I said, just put them back behind the camera. I hate them.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I hate them so much. So they run back inside the house. They trying to find Kelly, who is upstairs having sex.
Yeah.
And then again, you get these fucking comments from Todd and Doug.
I mean, they are right, though. I probably would have said the same thing. I would be like, that girl, that was not her first time. She is riding it like a pro.
Oh my gosh. The crew tries to explain to the kids what's going on. They're doing a terrible job at this, by the way.
My gosh, such a terrible job.
Meanwhile, the stoner kids leave. They go to the shed where all the weapons are, but get murdered immediately. You did get one kind of okay-ish kill when he pr like pulls the heart out of one and puts it in his
Puts it in
hand.
his hand. Yeah. I did
Right?
like that. Yeah.
So I'll give them credit.
That's a good example of what they could have done with the couple that was having sex, the first couple that is killed. Because if you know you're low budget and you don't have a lot to work with, maybe just go real camp with it and be horror movie and just make it look really silly and over the top when it goes into cinematic mode. Because that kill felt really silly. The heart actually looked pretty good, but it felt really silly. You don't actually see the whole body, but you see the heart going into the hand, and that's super fun. Like, just make them all really silly and over the top, just so that you get that like blood payoff.
And who doesn't love a good blood payoff?
Yeah.
So they run outside and find, the kid getting his heart pulled out of him. They run to the van. Again, why didn't you think that he was going to take the spark plugs out of their van too?
Yeah, that probably was their fucking spark plug that he was holding in his hand, honestly.
Probably was. I mean,
Yeah.
I wouldn't know if you just held a random spark plug in front of me. I would not know if that was the one that went to my car, but I'm
No,
going to assume.
no one would.
So the van won't start. And they're like, what do we do? And then Taylor's like, we're going to run back to the house. He's not planning on that. So, because again, like she thinks that as long as they just keep interfering with how he laid out his plan that he explained to them earlier, that they
Yeah.
have a chance for surviving,
Yeah.
which. They
Because
don't, because I mean,
she still has not figured out what's actually going on. I would definitely count on him pivoting to the plan, like from the plan, if you now are a variable.
because I mean,
100%.
ultimately, his plan does come to fruition.
Yeah. It
Yeah.
does.
So, and exactly how. So
Yeah.
they go back inside, they argue. Kelly's like, yeah, hey, sorry for being sexually active. I hear you.
Yeah.
No shame, Kelly. You're good. But then she jumps out a window.
She's trying to climb the tree. And remember, he's booby-trapped all the trees. So he like cut the branches so that they're flimsy. So she was trying to climb out from the top of the tree for some reason, knowing he's out there.
So she falls and she dies.
I like that they kill Kelly off nice and early. Like, you still have more of the group left.
Yeah, like she's not the first one to be killed out of the group, but you get the stoner kids first. But I like, yeah, that she's earlier on,
Yeah.
So she's dead. They run outside. Thank God Todd does a solid and dies because I was not having it with him anymore.
It's good that he tried to sacrifice himself, you know? He was trying to do the right thing. Too little, too late.
Yeah, too little, too late, Todd. And because again, he was like still all of these like shitty offhand comments that he was making throughout this. Ugh. And then to make it seem like he has this like hero moment, I'm like, no, fuck you, Todd. Just go, you go run
Yeah,
until you
go
die.
die.
Yeah. And just the least you could do, I guess, is buy us a little bit of time, but it doesn't even really matter. So, how
It doesn't.
you're useless, Todd. Fuck you. He's dead.
Yeah.
They're in the barn. They go to the top, and then would you believe it? Taylor remembers she's a virgin.
Yeah, she's like, oh, wait a minute. Is
Yeah.
that what that means, that you have never had sex before? I'm a virgin.
Oh no. She was like, I thought hands counted.
Yeah, no, she thinks she's real smart, but she is not.
And she's like broken down to tears with this realization. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? How much of this movie's left?
Well, and especially because we lose Kelly so like
Yeah.
mid-group, in my mind, I'd be like, wait, if our survivor girl is gone and we still have bodies to burn through, let's reevaluate this plan, because something is not adding up. And there it is. And I love that the other girl, the cheerleader, I presume, is the one who like points it out to her.
It's like not the cheerleader, but it's not fucking what's
Not
her face,
Kelly.
Kelly,
Yeah.
but it is like the other friend.
The other friend.
The
Yeah.
one who keeps getting
The
like the
panty
underwear shot
shot.
from, yeah, up the
I
ladder.
love that they do it three times. You probably hate it. I thought it was so funny.
That and the obligatory like boob shot when he's like talking through the story. And he's like, Taylor, this is my story. Remember. And you're just like, oh boy, okay. That's where I'm just kind of like, this movie, I'm like, it's like pointing to things and acknowledging it is not the same as like being clever, you know?
It's not, I will say that, but I did think the repeat shot of the panties was very funny. I was laughing. I thought it was so funny. But I have maybe a little lower of a bar for humor than you do.
So she realizes I'm the virgin. What do we do? Doc Holloran a lot arrives, only to get hit upside the head with
So
a
quickly he
shovel.
gets killed. Or not killed, he gets taken out.
And then at this point, they're confronted again by Leslie Vernon, who's showed up to the cabin. This is when the, or no, he's like, he's at the top again because he does end up killing the remaining two kids, how he planned. You know, by pulling her up and killing her and then pulling him up and then, you know, hanging him. And then he also falls down in the process. You have this standoff because, you know, he's only down for a second. You see him sit back up, kind of like Michael Myers.
That
That
quick.
straight. You have a little bit of bargaining between them. And then Halloran, I think this is when he comes to again. And then is killed, or you think he's killed, because again, yeah, he's like stabbed with the scythe.
Yeah, they make it look like he's dead.
But then it turns out he's not at the end.
Thank
And
goodness.
so then they're going to escape. Doug, for some reason, fucking Doug, is like, I love her.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to get through me. And I'm like, what the fuck did this
I would
come
not
from,
be
Doug?
threatened by that at all. And we know nothing about you, Doug. So you can't come out here with your fucking love hero bullshit story. We don't want any of that.
Yeah, I hate Todd and Doug so much in this movie. But so
I'm
just
Taylor, I'd be
whatever.
like, if you love me so much, why didn't you fuck me? So we weren't in this situation to begin with.
I don't know. When he was saying that, like if I were Taylor Turner, I'd be like, wait, you fool, what? No, you don't, dude. Get the fuck out of here. And so he gets knocked out. I knew he wasn't dead by that. You'd have to like see it, because he just like hits his head against the you know, the wood pillar or whatever. And then starts going after Taylor. Taylor goes to the shed, the womb, emerges with the wiener axe, takes it through the birth canal into the apple orchard. Okay.
She does a nice little like shirt rip off situation where she's in the like white tank top.
Right, and does kind of like, I forget exactly what she says, but it's kind of like a like an Ash from Evil Dead, like, let's get some motherfucker, like kind of thing that she says. And that's when she becomes like really like the rip, and she's burst out. She is now this new, what once
Has
was once
revenge.
a Charmander, is now a Charmeleon. Not quite Charizard, I don't know. There's a confrontation between her and Leslie. She thinks she gets him because it gets him with the axe to the gut pretty good.
Yeah, really good.
So, and then she just keeps running, running, running. Then makes it to that barn, that shed where the apple crusher was that he had pointed out earlier in the movie, which I think is a nice touch. I was like, if you're just going to do anything, man, invest in. Like, don't, you don't need to, you could have saved money by licensing that Talking Heads song at the end. Don't need that. You should put everything towards putting a fake head and watching the eyeballs crush out and all the, and then it get blood and cider, all apple, all mixed together. And like, I wanted to see something glorious, but you
That
don't
is
get that.
exactly what I wrote. I feel like it's such a wasted opportunity because you just get a little blood from his mouth. And also, knowing that you've got Jason, Michael Myers, Chucky, Freddy Krueger. Obviously, we all are aware that supernatural things do exist. I'm gonna need you to smush that head into a bloody pulp. It needs to look like those mushy apples from earlier in the movie because I'd be worried that he was still just gonna get up.
Yeah, so they have that confrontation again. Obviously, he's still alive, and yeah, puts his head in that apple crusher and just cranks away. You know,
Mush.
again, doesn't go the whole way. But again, like I said, ultimately his plan did come to fruition. I mean,
It
even said at
did.
the beginning, it's like I'm either going to be in jail or on the run or dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do at least appreciate her being like, "This is not enough. There's some gasoline. I'm going to light this fucker up." So, but she does. Does her scream, you know, release of she's one, she's also just
Trauma.
that trauma release, I don't know. And that's pretty much it. I mean, like Doug and Hollerin are still alive.
Yeah, they come to check in on her just too late.
Yeah. I'm sure they're like, ah, she's probably got this. Let's just wait outside until she's finished. Let's wait and see who comes out of there first. And
Yeah, and just go from there.
yeah, be like, oh man, we were rooting for you the whole time. Or like, oh, we got
Yeah.
here, I swear, as soon as we
We
could.
were barely conscious, so.
Yeah. And then, like I said, that shed goes up in flames, and that's the end of the movie. Yeah. Did I forget anything?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, gosh, I'd love to hear some taglines.
Okay, there is one tagline for this movie. Lucky
Okay.
you. Jason, Freddie, Myers, we all need someone to look up to.
Okay.
So they kind of, I feel like that tagline would make me think that he's like obsessed with movies, horror movies.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be thinking that he was living in the same world as all three of them. But it's fine. That's a fine tagline.
Boo scores. Can you go first?
I knew you were going to make me go first because the way that you walked through this plot, I can tell that you are not a fan. I really like the premise of this movie. I remember when I read the description of it, I was like, ooh, that's a really fun idea. It's very original. I think it's really fun. I actually think the first. Gosh, like the first 60 minutes of this movie, I find very entertaining, at least the first watch and the second watch, because the first watch, when you're not realizing that it's actually Taylor, you're just kind of, going through the movie trying to figure it out. And then when I watched it the second time, I enjoyed watching it with the lens knowing that she was his survivor girl instead of Kelly. So I really enjoy the beginning of this movie. I love that it has Robert Englund. So, of course, industry legend there. And the things that I don't like that I wish they would improve, would have improved on. There's a lot of really rough acting in this movie. Like, putting Robert Englund, like, they should have just not had Robert Englund in the movie if the acting wasn't going to be like stronger, because then you see like what it should look like. I will give, and now I don't remember his name, the one who plays Leslie Vernon. I'll give him credit. I think he was really good, actually. I really enjoy him as a character, and I really enjoyed the way he played it. The off-screen kills are a bummer. I wish they would have went harder with that. I wish they would have went campier with it. Like, if you're going to have that element of humor, just lean into that all the way. So the third act of this movie falls really flat for me. Like, I barely took any notes even at the end of the movie. I was kind of just zoning out in it, trying to find something redeemable. So that makes it hard for me. But I do really enjoy the beginning of the movie. I do think it has some fun things to it. And just like when we talked about Dead End, I think that they could remake this movie and make it better. Because I do think it's a really fun premise, and I think you could do a lot with it. That being said, I'm gonna give it a generous 2.5 booze.
Okay. There is a sequel. I do
Oh,
know
there
that.
is? I didn't know
Yeah.
that.
So I don't know if that is their kind of shot to kind of improve on the premise, you know, and kind of do it a little better that time around. I'm not sure, but I'm interested to check it out.
Yeah, I would check it out.
Like there's certain movies where like I watch and I'm like, oh my God, I have no interest in watching the rest of these because I know how this is gonna go.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to see more.
Whereas like I would want to watch a sequel to this movie. So I will watch it at some point. Yeah, I mean you shared a lot of things that I said. I mean, it's like I like this kind of twist on it, like the documentary version or kind of framing on this. Because outside of that, I mean, it's just Scream, you know? It's just
It's
someone
very meta.
who yeah, looks up to movies. The only difference is that they like actually exist in this world, which I don't know if they have to.
They don't.
Right? Like they could have just been the movies and he's looking up to him as well. Like it doesn't matter, but
It adds a little fun to it, I think, though.
it is, like I said, it was one of my favorite parts of the movie that it was. But because I just like, because I think just because I love those characters so much and I like the idea of that little fucking doll running around.
Yeah,
Sounds
I love
so
the idea
great.
of all of them coexisting in the same United States.
Yeah. So I think anything that it has to say about like tropes isn't anything new, isn't anything that's, I don't know, super interesting, you know, especially because it still kind of comes from that gaze. And again, it's like, I don't know, are you just like shining a light on this and being like, oh, see how aware of this we are? But again, like, you know, awareness does not necessarily mean cleverness. And I'm sorry, it sounds like I'm tearing into this movie, but you know, like I said, it's still like absolutely an enjoyable watch. You've got Robert Englund, you got Zelda Rubinstein, like, so you got two industry legends. Even though the third act falls flat, like you said, I do like that shift from actually giving them a reason, like, let's put these cameras down and like be at more active participants in this. So I enjoy their way of doing that because I can't think of a whole lot of other movies that do that.
Can't think of one.
I didn't want to come down too hard on this movie because it's a listener request, but I
Doesn't
really,
matter. You can't please everybody.
this is a very watchable 1.5 boo movie.
Oh, okay. I think my score was so generous because I will watch this movie again. If I go like below a two, it's unlikely that I'm just going to sit and watch it. Like, I would watch at least the beginning of this movie again and then probably scroll on my phone towards the end. But yeah, I really enjoy the process of watching it. And I noticed a lot of little jokes that I didn't notice the last time I had seen it. So I'll take your 1.5. I thought you were going to go lower.
I'll want to watch this again to see if it's a me problem, you know?
To see if maybe you like it more.
Yeah, because that could always be, like I said, it just maybe just depends on the day I'm watching it. I don't know, or I'm not vibing with it a whole lot. But again, I feel like a combination of Scream and Cabin in the Woods says all the same things in a funnier, more well-directed, well-written way. You know, but I don't know if that's being too harsh.
Well, I will say I did look at Rotten Tomatoes because I was curious. This movie has a 76% critic score and a 75% audience score, which are both pretty solid. So I think this could be me just presuming how others feel. I think the premise of this movie is so strong that you forgive a lot. Because I know
Yeah.
I do. Like, I love the idea of this guy planning to be the next Michael Myers and thinking about his backstory, like doing these weird little, tricks and things like that and overthinking everything. I think that is such a fun premise. So that gives it a whole boo for me of like this really original, fun idea. Anyone who loves slashers will come into it with a forgiving lens, I think, because you love those things.
But didn't Billy Loomis and Stu Macher already do this? I think the originality comes from it being documented. Like if
Yeah,
there
that's what I'm
was
saying.
someone following and talking to Stu and Billy the whole time as they're plotting all of this out.
Oh, like you've never thought about like how fun it would be to see the conversations of Billy and Stu like planning and walking through how they're going to do all of this. I would pay good money to see that shit.
Just do it now with, 50-year-old Skeet Ulrich and
Yeah.
Matthew Lillard. I don't
De-age
care.
them. We know that works really well.
Don't even need to do it. Like, fuck, those Saw movies will tell you, don't even bother. You don't need to de-age him. Just call it a prequel, put in some 90s clothes, and you're good.
Yeah, you could do that.
Again, watchable movie.
Yeah.
Y'all tell me if 1.5 is too harsh.
I think it's too harsh.
I wasn't asking you.
I know.
Anything else you want to say about Behind the Mask, Rise of Leslie Vernon?
No, just another shout out to Mouths of Madness for requesting it, because it was fun to discuss, and I had a feeling that I was going to like it more than you.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun talking about it. Yeah, definitely go check out Mouths of Madness. Now I'm like, I'm gonna go listen to their episode and they're
Oh,
gonna
for
like point
sure.
out all the things that just went over my head. I'm just gonna sound like such a fucking idiot.
I hope that they love it so that when I'm listening to it, I could be like, oh yeah, that is really cool. And it, hopefully revamps my love for it again.
Okay. Merry Christmas if you celebrate. And then, yeah, we'll be wrapping up the new year with talking about movies that actually came out this year.
Yeah,
So
that's
excited to
always
do
fun.
that. Yeah, and then ring in the new year and then on to 2025. All right, take care, everybody. Man, I'm really craving an apple right now. 3, 2, 1, ghost.
Thanks for listening to our episode on Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to our podcast and leave us a killer review on whichever platform you choose to listen. You can find us on Instagram at 321GhostPod and give us a follow. We're very active on Instagram and would love to hear from you. You can shoot an email to 321GhostPod@gmail.com to share any thoughts, questions, or request a movie you'd like to hear us chat about. Shout out to Kevin from the Mouths of Madness podcast for requesting this film. Next week, we're wrapping up the year with our end of year recap for 2024 horror. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you can't just film murders and not be held accountable. So, there's something to think about this holiday season. 3, 2, 1, ghost.